Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Talent Game podcast. I'm your host, Joe Burridge, and with me today is John Warner. Hey, John, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Joe, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to have you on. And so for our listeners who don't know who you are, please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, you bet. Hi, I'm John Warner. I have been in the video game industry for 22 years now. Yeah. And worked in Microsoft and Disney and EA. And I'm currently an executive at Hyper Hippo Entertainment here in British Columbia, Kelowna.
Oh, fantastic. And what a career. This is why I'm so excited to dive in to a lot of this. And the slate of games you've worked on as well, I've not only played them, but thoroughly admire a whole bunch. So, yeah, very exciting.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. And also, you live in a very beautiful part of Canada. I must say, I was looking up images of this place. The name completely escapes me now. But yeah, very nice place to the world.
Thank you. I think so too. It's lovely. It's a lush place to live. Kelowna, British Columbia, is one of the winemaking regions in Canada, and a gorgeous place to live, surrounded by lakes and orchards and vineyards. It's really amazing.
Yeah, it's incredibly picturesque. So yeah, I like that. Great. You've got you've got all your amazing work that you can do, and then you've got unlimited wine within walking distance. Like, you know, can't really complain too much.
That is a double-edged sword, Joe. It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, fueling creativity, let's say. Talking of video games, not so much wine, what are you playing right now?
Let's see here. I'm playing a bunch of stuff. On my Steam Deck, I'm playing a great little game called Feyland, which is this amazing little pixel art Metroidvania style game, and I'm absolutely in love with it. What else am I playing? I'm playing Dragon Age: The Veilguard, and on my PS5, and I'm playing Hogwarts Legacy on my Xbox right now, which is a lot of fun. And on mobile, I'm playing a bunch of different stuff. Let me check the name of this one game, because I don't want to mess it up, because I'm really having a good time with it. You know what? I was just playing Brokey and Archero 2 on my iPhone, and those are entertaining.
Yeah, I happy behind Archero 2, I think. What an incredible studio as well. And it seemed, I haven't checked the data actually on Archero 2, but I get the impression, just from the anecdotal reactions and also myself playing the game, that they've done a fantastic job with that sequel.
Agreed. I think it's a quality step up in almost every way. It's hats off to those teams. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and by the way, in terms of the console games you mentioned, yeah, Dragon Age: Veilguard. Yeah, I'm a few hours into that now. I'm terrible for having multiple games on the go at the same time. So, I'm playing Spider-Man 2 and Dragon Age: Veilguard, and then sometimes I dabble in trying to finish my Hogwarts Legacy playthrough. I love Metroidvanias, and I just downloaded Animal Well. But then I noticed the makers behind Gree released a game called Never. I was like, okay, well, I'll add that to my list.
I gotta give that a shot.
Yeah. never ending list. Oh, yeah. And I was rather public on LinkedIn at the beginning of January that I was like, yeah, it's my newest resolution to complete stuff before I buy new stuff. And we're in February and I've already broken that. So yeah.
Also it goes.
Yeah, terrible. Well, hey, so you mentioned in your introduction this amazing career that we're going to dive into in the video game industry. But how did that all start? Like, how did you get into games in the first place?
Yeah, I would say this was kind of an unconventional way of getting in. Before I was in the games industry, I served in the U.S. military as an intelligence analyst. And once I figured I was done with that, I was working in enterprise software as an interface designer. And one day we strolled into work and, you know, there were security guards out the hall. And it was like, ruh-roh, what's going on, everybody? And found out that we had all been laid off that day. And I found myself in a really strange position because I hadn't been out of work in like 10 years. And so I was kind of casting about. I didn't know what to do. And a friend of mine called me and said, hey, I'm working at Microsoft on this thing called the Xbox. He says, I think you'll really dig it. You should come work with me. I was like, okay, great. I'm in. And, it's been, as soon as I got in there, I was working in a Microsoft studio in Salt Lake City, and it was a sports studio. And I was in QA, and I absolutely fell in love. And I knew that this was what I was supposed to be doing.
That's fantastic. Also, you're the second person on this podcast who started out as an intelligence analyst in the military. Yeah. I had Ido Naim on here, and he started out in the Israeli army as an intelligence analyst before getting into video games. So there you go. But I love that. So referred in, that's surprisingly quite common. Having a friend being like, yeah, I'm working on this Xbox thing. Like,
Who knows if it's going to take off? I mean, but let's give it a go. That was great because, I got to be an original beta tester on Xbox Live. I've had my same gamer tag since, 2002?
Wow.
It was, it's been really cool. It was a great part of my journey.
Did you fall prey to having a very cringe gamer tag? I'm not going to ask you to name it publicly so people could find you. Please don't do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I did because, it was like, well, what's this? Who knows? Yeah. And I actually used my real gamer tag in one of the Anthem trailers when we were doing Anthem in the multiplayer demo. But a few people caught on to that and sent me a message, but mostly just went under the radar.
Oh, nice. Nice little Easter egg in there. But another well-suggested route into games is through QA as well. But you went from QA, progressing through, production, you're eventually chief of staff at BioWare, you're now senior VP at Hyper Hippo. So summarizing, 20-ish years of career is quite tough, but I guess how did that path happen, going from QA into production as well?
Probably should have mentioned that in my introduction, added a few more details in there, but I agree. Going into QA was a great place for me to start, because that's where you really get to learn how games get made and how they get broken and why they break and where a lot of the problems lie. So it was a great primer in just understanding how to break software and really look at it from an analytical point of view. After I'd been doing that for a little while and got to launch a couple of titles on Xbox, I went over, had an opportunity to go start as a producer at another Salt Lake studio, Avalanche Software, who were then subsequently bought by Disney, and got to work on a lot of really fun titles at Disney and Avalanche, and got to work with Pixar, which was a real treat, doing stuff like Toy Story 3 and Cars 2. Got to go to the Pixar studio and work directly with their creative team, which was a really fantastic learning experience and really getting a behind-the-scenes look in how to put together stories and narratives and how to bring that kind of impactful entertainment to life.
That's great. I'm just looking down. I always use Ed Catmull's book, Creativity Inc., to prop up my microphone here, hoping that
good vibes, just the osmosis, you know.
Really hoping it just flows into my brain from there.
That's fantastic.
Brilliant. So, and one introduction to production as well on some of these huge titles. So, and then obviously onto EA with BioWare on like Mass Effect, and you just mentioned Anthem as well. And I guess being chief of staff, you're thinking about, you know, all IPs at that point. So that Dragon Age gets thrown in there too. I think my main question for you is with regards to production, and obviously this is a talent focus podcast, that is such a talent and a task to wrangle groups of people from small working on, you know, mini features to studio wide multiple IPs. A big question, but like how do you get a group of people aligned on a mission and a vision to deliver something?
Yeah, well, it's really easy, Joe. You just there are three simple steps. You tell them what to do. Everybody agrees. There's no creative friction, and then everybody does it, and it's fantastic. Next question, please.
Yeah. That, and now we move on. And in fact, we can end in there. That what a highlight.
Keep up the mic.
No, I did throw a huge grenade. I was just saying, I did throw a huge grenade of a question at you there. So you can start anywhere you like.
It's a great question. It really is. And it's, I would say, one of the more difficult things to learn how to master in the industry. I'm a big believer in bringing people, you know, in and along on the journey. Casey Hudson, who was a great mentor to me, said, "Hey, look, when you are crafting a vision for a game, you know, you're holding the basket and you get to put a lot of stuff inside the basket, but everybody else on the team is putting stuff inside the basket too. And so you have to be able to set a clear kind of sandbox of, you know, what's in and what's out and what is good and what is not." And Casey was excellent at that. I was not, to be frank, for a lot of my career as a producer. That was one of the big tasks that I needed to learn. And I had, you know, many learning opportunities along the way, lots of failures, some good successes. And, you know, it gave me a great appreciation for creatives who are working on especially large projects, who are able to bring it all together, craft a vision that is captivating and enthralling for the dev team, as well as business leaders, and then keep the focus on it and bring it to life. It's a gigantic challenge.
Yeah, and my head is going through there a whole bunch of things. I think one thing that I'm thinking about quite a bit, and it's because I come from a recruiting background, so I see every nail as a recruiting shaped hammer sometimes. What would you say is the highest priority, or is it generally just a blend of mix when it comes to aligning on that? Is it like, okay, if we got to hire a great team first, because without like a great team, it's not going to happen? Or it's like, okay, I've inherited this team and I can't change that team. So in that scenario, what is the thing that's going to get us aligned there? I guess, is it hiring? Is it like just production process? Is it culture? Is it a combination? There's obviously no magic silver bullets here for any of this, but I'm just intrigued to know from your experience and the teams that you've been in, what have been the biggest influences in terms of succeeding and failings?
I think that, you know, when you have a team already in place, it's really important to be able to step back and understand the capabilities of that team. You know, what are we good at? Where are we challenged? Where do we need support? And then you can really start to understand the scope of the things that are within your grasp. You don't want to, you know, start. I've been at places where, you know, if you kind of start with, hey, I have this great idea for a character, or I have a great idea for a story, and then you kind of build backwards into it. And then at the end of the day, you're like, oh, well, can we make this? Do we have the right people to make this? It's like, well, you know, kind of. And that's always a struggle. That is always a struggle. I prefer, and I think it's a better methodology to go that way. Look at your team, look at your tech stack, and understand what capabilities you have. Are you working with your own engine? Are you, you know, Unreal? What are you using? From that point, you can then look at your business case and say, well, who are we trying to reach? Well, who's our audience? Who are we trying to entertain with this? And then what type of game should it be? And then, you know, eventually you kind of build up this pyramid where at the top, at the pinnacle, that's where you get that great, well, look, here's the story, here's the characters, here's how it all unfolds, that rich narrative. But that comes later in the game. At least that's how I've seen it work best. And so really focusing on understanding your team, their strengths, how they're using and interacting with their tech stack, and then you get a real good idea of what's within you.
Yeah, I love that. And also the flexibility that you have to be successful in those positions as well. When you're working with, especially in the case you've been in with large global teams and you're inheriting some teams and inheriting leaders and just as fast as possible, figuring out their strengths and weaknesses and then making a plan. That's it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it is, you know, everyone always says it, right? Well, we're building the airplane as we're flying the thing. And it becomes really crucial. And I could say that in some instances, I've had really good instincts and been able to get that done well and right. And there are some times when you think you have the right team in place, you think you understand all the personalities in play, and you don't. And that's when things get challenging and rocky. And, you know.
Yeah. So dwelling on the, well, and not to be too negative, but dwelling on the challenges there, what are some of those key learnings? Because you mentioned just then in that one scenario, getting it wrong about that assessment of strengths and weaknesses. Is there any particular, without name dropping or anything, any particular scenarios in mind or any bits of nuggets of wisdom that you've now taken forward into the whole brand new area of games, mobile, the type A, but.
Yeah, oh boy, that's been interesting for sure. But let's start with, you know, going in and trying to sort out and figure out the team. I have great respect for everybody who is in this industry and who puts up their hand and says, hey, I want to make video games. It's tough business. It's hard to do. And we get into the work because we're passionate about it. We love it. I loved video games my entire life. My first video game recollection is playing Pong on a dedicated Pong box that my dad brought home. It's passion, and we're all passionate about it. And so trying to get the team together in a way where we're all pointing in the same direction. So it comes kind of back to vision, right? So if you, as a leader, if you haven't set a really clear vision that people can turn into action, then your people are going to struggle, and you're not going to have the kind of results that you want. And so for me, I always trace it right back to the leader setting the vision properly and appropriately and bringing people along on it. And then once we're all looking at each other, everybody understands the business case of what we're trying to make. Everybody understands, our team composition and the tools that we have at hand, our deadlines, our budget. I think this is an important one. Team needs to understand the budget so that time horizons become relevant, right? In order for this game to be profitable and so that we can make another one, God help us, you have to understand that this thing has to be profitable. And so this is how much money we have to spend. This is how much time that equates to with the team size. This is what we're trying to achieve. If those things aren't all clear, it's so easy for the team to go off track or to, noodle in on the wayside. It can become a real quagmire.
Yeah. And, I think as well from, like you said, games is such a difficult art form to master, and there's very creative people in there. Would you agree that, because everyone's striving to put their own imprint on the game, going back to that analogy of everyone's trying to put their own things in the basket, their own eggs in the basket. But I guess if you have that really clear vision, everyone knows what to aim for. At that point, actually, you can give them a ton of autonomy in terms of like creative problem solving towards that shared goal, because they know the restrictions, but then they're opened up to like I said, be free in terms of the creative implementation.
Exactly, and it keeps you from micromanaging. When everybody's got all the information you need and understands the goals, your job at that point is to get out of the way and let amazing things happen.
That's fantastic. And I guess the second part, and I was getting ahead of myself with the way at tagging on the mobile part to that previous question, but yeah, I guess the second part to that, I would love to know, you're coming up to your 4-year anniversary, I think, at Hyper Hippo. So I'd love to know how that has been going from the world of PC console into mobile. Have those leadership lessons stayed true, or is there enough cultural and behavioral process differences in mobile for you to have had to adapt some?
What a fantastic question. I think that yes, the leadership lessons have remained true, and the things that I took away from my experience in AAA and console PC has really benefited. I really, leaving BioWare after my stint as chief of staff, I really wanted to take all of these valuable lessons that I learned and apply them. And I knew that there was a massive part of our industry that I just hadn't been exposed to or had a chance to work in or play in. And so, making that switch over to mobile, the games are very different. The timelines are very different. The budgets are very different. But the constant is the talent. You have passionate people who really love games, who want to make something really cool. And so those lessons transfer across really well. The lessons of not micromanaging, of making sure that everybody understands what's going on and why. I've found that with smaller mobile teams have been much easier to implement than on, large AAA. So in that case, I found that those lessons have been really easy to transfer. And then it was just learning the vast amount of knowledge that I needed to figure out the mobile gaming space. And, fortunately, I had an amazing team backing me up and supporting me so that I could learn those lessons.
Yeah, even my own experience coming from the world of PC console to now being much more involved with mobile, I think one of the And I'd love to know if you agree or not. But one of the most immediately striking differences is that I think the average person in mobile perhaps is closer to perhaps understanding the finances and business implications of the game they're developing. Jeez. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing to anyone who works in PC console. I think just my experience in working in PC console is generally, and maybe it was just quite removed, or it was like all in on, is this going to be the most incredible piece of art or something like that? But I think there is, maybe it's just baked in as a newer art form. We think mobile's really only been around for, technically been around longer, but I think the iPhone launched 2007 compared to the first games console that was released, right? So I don't know. Do you agree with that? Or am I maybe just so happened to have met some very business astute mobile devs?
I think you're spot on. I think that mobile is such a data driven process.
Mm.
Really have to be in touch with your players, and you know, pre-IDFA, you really did have a really nice, clean, sharp look at who they were and what they liked. And so it really informed decisions that got made, how quickly your dev cycle needed to be. I beg your pardon. And how quick you need to get to market. There's so many titles, there's so much saturation standing out, and being very thrifty and efficient in your development budgets becomes super, super important. So yeah, I would agree with you wholeheartedly, Joe. I think mobile developers do tend to be acutely aware of the business situation.
Yeah, and I guess maybe they just have the experience to do that. If you think you go from a 5-year dev life cycle to a 6-month one, well, funny enough, you're shipping more games and you get to see the fruits of that labor more often, and it just becomes part of your knowledge and everything else. Yeah, fantastic. So, before I guess we come to some of our closing thoughts. What if there's anything else at all that, because we skimmed over a lot, gone across quite a few big subjects. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention, or any other thoughts that come to mind about your journey here through the games industry on talent before we head to the final question?
Yeah, you know, I think that probably the biggest takeaway after doing this for 22 years is that, you know, talent is what makes the thing go, right? It's not your data pipeline. It's not your structure. It's not Scrum. It's not any of the modalities and methodologies that we use to create things. It's people who create is what drives our industry. And, you know, sometimes it's easy to lose sight of that. I mean, it seems very common sense, right? Like, of course, John, don't be an idiot. But it is easy to lose sight of it sometimes, especially when we start talking about people as resource. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, passionate people telling their stories, applying their craft is what makes unforgettable. And whether you're watching that in a movie theater or whether you're interacting with it on your phone or in your living room, I don't think it matters that much. I think that it's talent that drives this machine. Taking care of your people, carefully selecting the right people who will be good culture fits and good leaders, good listeners. I think it's important, treating your people well. And my goal has always been to try to leave the industry in a little bit better than when I found it. I don't know that I've always been able to achieve that, but it is my goal, and it's what I'll always strive to do until somebody tells me that I can't do this job anymore, and then I'll go do it someplace else.
Yeah, I love that statement. Also, there was a brief thing you mentioned in there. This is why I have a visceral reaction to the phrase human resources. Naturally, I've been in HR people teams. I'm like, I cannot use that phrase, human resources. It always has to be the people team or the talent team or something like that. On that note, I can't help but think about when you're saying that, obviously the games industry with layoffs and kind of how difficult the market is right now. Like, I completely agree wholeheartedly with everything you just said about the talent. But I don't really know what the question is, but what's your perspective on everything that's happening right now? Maybe that's the question. And the longer term impact on that.
Yeah. Well, it's brutal right now, right? It's brutal. An unprecedented number of highly talented people have been, dumped into this marketplace where it's increasingly difficult to find a job. I think that, as a market correction, from a time when things were booming, there's some of that that's happening. There's a lot of disruption, though, in how we're building games and the number of people who are consuming that entertainment and the attention economy, right? We all participate in the attention economy, whether it's, a streaming service or a game or, just your everyday life, your job, your family, your pets. It all draws on our attention, and we only have so much to give. So I think that it's more important than ever that we are crafting experiences that are delivering, that delight and that wonder. When people go looking for something to play, they want to be really in love with the thing that they're playing. So, yeah, I hope that we get through this period soon. That the talented people who do this crazy job are back in a place where they should be doing great things.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I'm just I'm forever the optimist, and so we won't dive into this now. I said we're getting to the end, and now we're diving into the massive issue of that. But I think I'll just say I totally agree. I think there are some interesting signs. There's always interesting signs to point towards whether it's going to improve or not. But yeah, that you're right. Like, one thing that's kept me in the games industry, I think what pulls you in is that you love games. You love playing games. You're intellectually curious about how games are made, and you want to be part of that industry. Great. What keeps people in is the people. And I think I hear that time and time again, being surrounded by people who love the same things that you do, incredibly smart people on the technology side, incredibly creative people on the art side, and also vice versa as well. Just this completely unique mashup of brains. It's fantastic. So yeah. So my final question that I ask everyone is, what is your favorite interview question?
The favorite interview question. I have an absolute favorite interview question. I always ask it, and I want people to tell me about your biggest failure. Tell me about your biggest failure, the most spectacular failure that you've had. Tell me what it was, and tell me what you learned from it, and tell me how you recovered afterwards. And I love that question because I think it reveals a host of things. I think it lets you know if the people that you're talking with are willing to open up and be a little vulnerable I believe that creating entertainment is one of the most vulnerable things that you can do, because you're putting it all out there for millions of people to critique and to love or hate. And people are vocal about that stuff.
Yes, especially in games. I feel
especially
like
in games. And so if you have a candidate who you're speaking with who is willing to open up and be a little vulnerable and say, hey, I really struggled with this, or I had a just a spectacular failure, and it took me months to recover from it, but I did, and here's how, and this is what I learned. You know, I like to hear about their resiliency and the thing that they learned, because ultimately, Joe, I don't think we learn a whole lot from success. If you're just going down the road and everything you touch turns to gold, I don't think you're learning important things that will eventually catch up with you. And so when we fail, we learn important things, whether it's about the craft of making a game, whether it's about leading people, whether it's about finance and business. There's a host of lessons that can be gleaned from every failure. And, you know, Lord knows I've had my share of failures, and I feel like I've learned from that and I've been enriched by it. And so I always am super curious to hear people tell me about their failures and what they've learned, because I think that's where we really shine as human beings, is not necessarily in the triumph, but in how we bounce back from the trials, from the tribulations. And those are the people I want to work with. Yeah. Brené Brown says that, you know, in quoting Teddy Roosevelt, it's the people who have been in the arena, who know what it's like to do the hard work, to fight and to sweat. And, you know, not the critics who don't know what it's like to be down in the pit. So I want to hear those stories. I want to celebrate those stories with my candidate. And I want to see what I can learn by asking that very crucial question.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. That, and I'm also a big fan of that question. I was just thinking about how on the VC side, we look for, there's many factors that go into deciding when you're going to invest in, you know, a team or a company. But definitely one of the key things there is, does this team have the resilience and the grit and the intellectual curiosity and the energy and the intelligence to be able to fail like over and over again? Like on the mobile side, like will they keep iterating and prototyping and soft launching until they get to the point where they land their hit and then they can go from there? It's with creativity as well. It's like there are so, you're going to just fail so much more times than not. And you need to, and finding those people who know how to take away every time. What would you say is a red flag? Like, what would you say is a really bad way to answer that question?
I think there's a couple really bad ways to answer that question. One is the shallow path, where you kind of reach into your bag of answers and, you know, you bring out something like, well, you know, Joe, my biggest failure is that I work too much, or I work too hard, or I care too much. It's like, okay, well, thank you so much for your time. I also think that there's a tone deaf way to answer that question, which is to defer responsibility, you know, to other things, whether it's technology or people or what have you. I think each trial that we face can be and usually is intensely personal. And that's why it's so hard to talk about it. And I know that, you know, I've had interviews in my career where I've just come off of a rough patch and I'm too raw to answer the question well. And it's always good to know that about yourself going before you go in and have your interview. If you have areas where you're raw, Or you're like, oh man, I really don't want to talk about this. I don't even like to talk to myself about this. You know, maybe that's a flag where you should take a little bit more time before you jump back in.
That's a phenomenal piece of advice. Yeah, that's totally agree. I was thinking about how I would answer your own that question. What's your biggest failure? I'm not going to answer it right now for everyone here. But I was internalizing it, and I was thinking about, oh, that's cool. I'm actually at a place where I'd quite very happily in an interview setting just go into all of the mucky, horrible details about that particular situation. And I'm like, oh yeah, okay, well maybe I wasn't however long ago. So that's a great shout and a great bit of advice. I think we are at the end of this episode. John, I know I could chat to you for a long time because we were chatting but before recording, and now we've been chatting away, and now I have to actually stop at some point. But I've thoroughly enjoyed the call. I have to say thanks so much for taking the time to be on the podcast.
It was sincerely my pleasure, Joe. Really, it's been great, and I wish you much success going forward. I love the podcast, and I'll be listening.